Tonight's Torah portion is, well, to my mind, one of the most, I guess, complete and vital in terms of if there's a single portion that I could point to and say, look here. As a matter of fact, the portion is called Re'eh, which literally means see in Hebrew or behold. And I like that. So if I could point to a single portion and say, look here, behold, see this one place that pretty well nails a lot of the differences, the understanding that distinguishes the Messianic Torah observant believer, the new Hebraic roots movement, and the old original first century Yahuan church of Yeshua, however you want to call it, that from the thing that has become associated with the, you know, Catholic-inspired, more Sunday, sun-God-oriented stuff, it's pretty well contained right here in this portion. And as a matter of fact, the first couple of lines, you know, usually the Torah portions are named for the first unique word in the portion. And in this case it is. It's Deuteronomy 11, or Devarim 11, chapter 26, or chapter 11, verse 26, and it says, behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. Right there. There's a theme that I come to in Scripture over and over again, particularly when it comes to this idea that we talk about in the news every week about come out of her. It is that concept. Our Creator has given us a choice. It was the choice that was laid out for Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava in the garden. It's a choice that each of us has. It's a choice every time we walk from day to day, step to step, we have choose this day between good and evil, choose whom you will serve, between blessing and cursing. And so that's what it says, verse 27. I set before you this day blessing and a curse. A blessing if you obey the commandments of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, your God, which I command you this day, and a curse if you will not obey the commandments of Yahuwah your Elohim, but turn aside instead out of the way which I command you to go after other gods which you have not known. Right there, we see a whole bunch of things encapsulated. This idea that, well, William Penn said it in this country a long, long time ago, those who will not serve God will serve tyrants. I've known a lot of folks that would call themselves atheists or others that say, well, you know, I serve myself. And I hate to be disagreeable or argumentative, but that's not one of the choices. The choice is either you serve the Almighty, the King of the universe, or whether you like it or not, whether you know it or not, whether you believe it or not, you end up serving the other guy. And that's essentially what he's saying up here right front. Now, the other thing that I think is really interesting, and occasionally I like to go back and look at the Hebrew words, it's slightly different in the understanding of the Hebrew than the way that the King James reads. And I found this kind of fascinating. As a matter of fact, I saw an interesting teaching. It's hundreds of years old. It dates back to Rashi, one of the famous sages of Judaism. And in this case, I have to say, I think his understanding and his insight is right on. Because what we see here, it says, a blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord, and a curse if you will not obey. Right? Sounds simple. But what he points out is, in the Hebrew, it ain't. It's not that it's not simple, it's just not exactly what it says in the English. And it probably is better translated, a blessing that you obey the commandments. And I don't understand. What's the difference here? Well, the word is asher in the Hebrew. Asher. And it's a conditional. So think of it this way. If you were going to dicker with a car mechanic and say, I will pay you $100 if you will fix my car, right? Everybody knows what that means. He fixes the car, and when he has fixed the car, you pay him $100. Sense, right? But asher in the Hebrew is more like on the condition that. So what I would say is, I will pay you $100 on the condition that you fix my car. It still means if you want to be paid, I expect the car to be fixed, right? But do you understand the difference? When does the $100 get paid if I say, on the condition that you will fix my car, I give you the $100? It's paid up front. You with me? I pay him the $100 up front with the understanding that he will then keep my commandments, fix the car. So essentially what this says is really kind of interesting. Behold, I set before you a blessing and a curse. A blessing on the condition that you obey. And a curse if, and that word is im, or basically just means what it says, if you will not obey. And so what the sages point out, and I think this is beautiful, is the blessing is ours up front. It's a blessing that you obey. He gives you the blessings up front and expects you then to walk in obedience to him. The curse is if you don't walk in obedience. So it's kind of a, well, it's a little bit like the argument you're about grace, right? It's an unmerited favor. He's going to give you the blessing and expect the obedience. Just like a father maybe gives the son the allowance and expects that the son will earn it. Not the other way around. At this point, I guess, this is kind of key to everything that follows. We're going to go through some of these things in detail. Like I said, there is so much meat in this Torah. I'll try to go a little bit fast because I don't think even so we'll be able to get through all the pieces of it. But there's so much that is just plain really important. Again, this idea of other gods is going to show up real prominently in this portion tonight. And again, I'll ask it this way too. Who do we serve? It's key. Who do we serve? If we serve him, on the condition that we serve him, he will give us blessings and otherwise curses. And we have to remember that there is going to be a tendency. There's going to be this snare that's set for us out there. The prince of this world, from the beginning, he comes but to kill and deceive and destroy. He will do everything he can to try to track, trip up, lure, deceive people into going the other way, into serving other Elohim. Any of them will work. Doesn't have to be a particular other god. There's just one that's worthy of service, and any other will do so far as the other guy is concerned by whatever name we choose to pick. So on to chapter 12. These are the statutes and the judgments. We've talked about those words, mishpatim, chokim, some of those other things, not to be confused with law. These are really specifics, things that are being set out, and you can either do these or not do them. It's not just instruction. The instruction is kind of bigger than that. All these things which you will observe and do in the land, which Yahuwah Elohim of your fathers has given you to possess it all the days that you live upon the earth. Now, at this point, I'll stop because some of you remember Jeff, and this is one of Jeff's big things. He will always point out, these things technically apply in the land. We're not in the land. There are some things we just plain can't do. So don't get too wrapped around the axle that there may be a few things we can't do. We can't keep some of the sacrifices because we're not in the land and there's not a temple. We're not close to the place where he later on is going to tell us he puts his name. But on the other hand, as a good son or a good daughter or a bride, part of the bride-to-be, whatever it may be, if we want to try to please him, we'll do the best we can regardless. So even though we may not be able to obey perfectly, still, the obedient part of us that wants to please him will do what we can to walk in a way that does that. So even if we can't do everything perfectly and we're not in the land, these are still things that are worth knowing and worth trying to do. And the principle is clear too. The very next thing he says in the next line of chapter 12 is, you will utterly destroy all the places where the nations that you shall now possess served their mighty ones, their gods, upon the high mountains and upon the hills and under every green tree. And it gets real blunt. Well, one of the things we're going to see in this portion, I think, is so clear, and it's been pretty well glossed over for 1,700 years or more, is that our Creator doesn't like these other false gods. Not only does he not like them, he abhors them. He detests them. They are abominable to him. And he says we're to do essentially very, very blunt things with them. You shall overthrow their altars and break their pillars and burn their groves with fire and hew down the graven images of their God and destroy the names of them out of the place. Because you shall not do so unto Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh your Elohim. But the place which he chooses, which you shall choose out of all your tribes to put his name there, even his habitation you shall seek. And there you shall bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices and your tithes, and you shall do all these things. And then he repeats that again. You shall rejoice before him, you and your sons and your daughters and your men servants and your maid servants, even the Levite that's within your gates. And take heed to yourself. Another warning, that you don't offer burnt offerings in every place you see, but in the place which Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh shall choose. Verse 16, one other thing that's kind of interesting. I'll lay out just a couple as we go through here of some very specific commandments. There are two references in here in chapter 12, verse 16. You shall not eat the blood. Okay, you can eat all this flesh in your gates, whatever your soul lusteth after, according to the blessing that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh Elohim has given you. Everybody can eat of it, the unclean and the clean even. Only, you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it upon the earth as water. Why is that? He tells us, he repeats the command, then he tells us in verse 22, even as the roebuck and the hart is eaten, all these other things that have the cloven hoof and the cattle that you eat, you shall eat them. And even the unclean people, the clean and the unclean, shall eat of them alike. Only, he says it again, be sure that you do not eat the blood, for in the blood is the life. You may not eat the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it upon the earth as water. This is one of those very important things. It's one of those things that's interesting. I mean, have you ever been to Britain? You remember in Britain there's a thing called blood pudding? I mean, there's around the world there are all kinds of things that not only are unclean, but I guess when I read this, it sounds like it's even a notch above unclean. Because even clean animals, that you're allowed to eat their flesh, you're still not supposed to eat the blood. So it's doubly set apart if it's unclean blood. It's just plain something that we're not supposed to do. You shall not eat it, that it will go well with you. And yet, remember, so many places in the world will eat the blood. I've always thought it was interesting. Remember in Acts 15, there's a place where there's this big discussion between Peter and Kepha and Shaul, Paul, and some of the other disciples, and there's all these Gentiles, these people out of the nations that are wanting to come to Yeshua. They're wanting to learn Torah. And they basically write a letter and they agree on four things that they're to abstain from: fornication, from things offered to idols, and so forth. One of them is abstain from blood. And there's been lots of discussion in the church over the years, like these are the four things we work up to. And we've talked about it here. No, that's not what it says at all. What it says is these are four things that are the starting point. These are we don't even get past first base until we get these four things down. And one of them is you don't eat blood. So how ironic is it that we have now gotten to the place where the church teaches you can do all those things, it's not particularly important, and maybe it will work. So they make the four things the end point and then don't even seek to get to that spot. But this is real basic, and it's repeated over and over again. We're not to do this. Verse 30, end of chapter 12. And to my mind, this is one of the real keys to understanding Scripture. It's one of the real keys that shows where the train went off the tracks with the modern church. And again, these things that separate the Torah observant believers, the ones who look at the Word and say, well, you know, that's what it says. It's what it says. He says he doesn't change it. He told us that he wrote it down for us for a reason. And then he says this: take heed that you are not snared by following after these other nations and their gods, after they be destroyed before you. And don't inquire after their gods, saying, how did all these other nations serve their gods? Let's teach it in school. How did the Romans serve their gods? How did the Greek gods work? Let's teach all that in school. Saying, oh, well, even so, I will do likewise. We're told not to do that. You shall not do so unto Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh your Elohim, for every abomination to Yahuwah, which he hates, they have done unto their gods. Even their sons and their daughters have they burnt in the fire to their gods. Nowadays we see different kind of things, right? We see other kinds of sacrifices of infants to the gods of this land. That's a little bit blunt, but I contend if you look and see, you know, look and see what is the most important thing that a Supreme Court judge is going to be given the thumbs up or the thumbs down on. What's the one untouchable issue? How does he feel about abortion? The sacrament of the modern post-constitutional, post-biblical America. It literally has, and I know that's blunt and it's perhaps offensive to some folks. It's offensive to me to think that we live in a land where the litmus test is whether or not someone supports something which is such an abomination. We've passed our sons and daughters through the fire, essentially, very much like was done in olden times by the pagans of old. The new pagans have done that as well. So he says, whatsoever thing I command, you observe to do it. Here's the key. You are not to add to or subtract from. Does that sound familiar? We just heard this. This is actually a repetition of something that was told just a few verses earlier. It's in Deuteronomy 4:2. He says, don't add to it or subtract from it. So key. Matter of fact, and I kind of like to almost joke about it this way, it's the very last commandment in all of Scripture. It's a repetition. If you go to the end of the book in Revelation, I think it's chapter 21. I never remember this one by chapter and verse because it's not hard to find. Just go to the end of the book and look back. And the last command that you'll see, it says in here, let's read it. For I testify unto every man that hears the words of the prophecy of this book. If any man shall add to these things, God shall add to him the plagues that are written in this book. And if any man shall take away from the words of this book, God shall take away his part out of the book of life from all the things that are written in this book. So it's a repetition. Don't add to or subtract from. Yeah. We got a microphone. We'll get to you here.
One of the interesting things about this scripture, to me, it's one of my favorite scriptures, these last three verses you quoted in Deuteronomy 12. We're not being forbidden there from worshiping Baal, although elsewhere we're forbidden from doing that. We're not forbidden from going after Jupiter or Asherah or whatever you want to worship. We're forbidden from inquiring how they worship their gods and in doing so unto the Lord our God.
Okay.
So we can't take these, what the pagans do, appropriate that and say, well, Lord, here I come. We're gonna do it this way. We'll put a little Jupiter statue, but we'll write J-E-S-U-S on it.
Yeah, it's almost like if you look at, say, Vatican City and all these Roman gods and obelisks and pillars, and then we just took the old names off and said, this one's Peter and this one's... Yeah, put the little fish hats on and so forth. Oh, we got this Mithra. He was born on December 25th. We'll just abscond with his birthday and we'll call that holy. And we'll take this Ishtar person, this fertility goddess.
I think one of these days they're going to come up and say that Halloween is the day that Jesus graduated from high school or something.
That's right. Probably graduated from cemetery school. Got his license to practice religion.